John Teeter of KPMG and is my guest on Industry Chatter today. And, John, welcome. It's great to see you. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks.
You have been looking at the issue of healthcare information, both in your role as Deputy CIO at the Department of Health and Human Services and now in the work that you do for KPMG. One of the things we talked about before we went on the air was the all of the places in the federal government where healthcare information lives that people might not think about. And you told me about a number of interesting places where agencies hold healthcare information of one type or another that people don't think of it. Tell me about the some of the places where this stuff lives.
So there's the obvious places, you know, that you and I talked about. There's a Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. There's the Veterans Health Administration. There's DOD Medical Health System. But then there's some other smaller areas that you might not think about, such as DOJ's Department of Corrections. They have information, health information about, you know, inmates, et cetera. And then there's, you know, peripheral information exchanges from organizations like Customs and Border Protection.
Mm-hmm.
So there's product and chemicals and things like that that come into the country that have to have approval from a not necessarily a medical but certainly a health perspective, such as you know, from FDA approvals, medical devices, and certainly the chemicals that are used in certain types of processing for various medical purposes.
If I've talked about big data once on this program, I've talked about it a billion times. And the healthcare area is a place where it seems to me there's tremendous potential for using big data. But when you're handling the kind of information that you're handling, I imagine the protocols that have to exist and so on, dealing with HIPAA and so on, can be very cumbersome, maybe not difficult. Obviously, this is important information to protect, but it can make the lives of people trying to do some data analytics a lot more difficult.
Yeah, I think that's true, and that's long been the case.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a large amount of data from multiple sources that various agencies have tried to bring together. And a lot of times, you know, there are different impediments to sharing that data. You know, some of it is legislative. You know, states have rules that don't allow certain data to go outside of the state boundaries, et cetera. But then there's also the, as you pointed out, there's HIPAA rules. And then there's, on the federal side, you also have FISMA rules. And those are not the same. There's a larger number of controls on the FISMA side, for security purposes than there are on the HIPAA side.
Hmm.
And so whereas the industry operates largely under HIPAA, when the federal government starts to collect information, they then have to, satisfy the broader FISMA requirements. And so the security requirements are a little bit different.
Hmm.
I will say that, you know, the HIPAA requirements allow for the private sector to exchange information under some clearer guidelines than maybe what is evident under FISMA.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly that is the case as you go across the boundaries that exist between the HIPAA world and the FISMA world. And so whereas, you know, the national clearinghouses can exchange information with providers at physicians, hospitals, et cetera, on about 98% of the clinical information, the transactional information that support, you know, healthcare payments,
mm-hmm.
under HIPAA, that free flow of information might not be as clearly understood once you get inside the federal boundaries.
Mm-hmm. The exchange of information and the analysis of data and so on has been very common in the healthcare industry for a long time. I mean, we've had all kinds of tables and so on for years and years. What do you believe is the next stage of what people are doing, both in government and in the private sector, with healthcare data and how they're going to analyze it, assemble it, and present it to each other?
Well, I think there's two aspects of that. You know, Todd Park, the chief technology officer of the federal government, he always talks about data liberation.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason he talks about it in those terms is because the two aspects are those that are known and those that are unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you liberate the data and you challenge people to identify and use the data in ways that maybe had not been conceived of before, then you have a discovery of new uses of the data. But also we've got a lot of good work that's going on in the more structured area. You know, the Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT obviously has been charged with developing some standardized approaches to information exchanges. But those are largely, you know, the known use cases, if you will, for health and medical information.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the next evolution of all of this is trying to figure out the security ramifications of actually pushing the data together in its various forms. Big data, you know, by definition or by the definitions that most people use, accepts a variety of data constructs and data sources.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you start to push all of that data together, then the semantic meaning of the data could be at risk.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next step is to identify how to bring that data together in such a way that aggregations of data from multiple sources and under multiple constructs can actually produce some reliable results.
John Teeter of KPMG is my guest on Industry Chatter today, and you mentioned the FISMA requirements versus the HIPAA requirements when it comes to data security. What are the implications for both of those on the way that agencies can exchange information among the databases that they have? Obviously, they're not trading information on individual people, but certainly it strikes me that you mentioned CDC has databases of information that could be potentially valuable to VHA and to the Defense Health Agency and so on for reference purposes. What are the security ramifications there, John?
Well, I think that in some cases the security ramifications go back to the legislation that I mentioned before, because CDC is authorized by law to have access to information that supports their population health mission that maybe others aren't allowed to have.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is, those types of implications across agencies even come into play even before you start to talk about the interchange of data between the private sector and public sector agencies. So I think that, you know, when you talk about the difference between HIPAA and FISMA, that boundary. So for instance, I don't have the exact numbers here, but I think that HIPAA has about 180 some controls associated with it, where FISMA has 200 some.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can see that, you know, simply, you know, trying to cross that boundary and do that mapping,
yeah,
is going to be difficult. And we have not had a clarification of that gray area where the direction of data from the private sector flowing into the federal, usually that's not too much of an issue, because you have a more stringent, typically, FISMA standard that has to be met for the handling of the data once it's in the federal boundaries. But when you start to have the information that the government holds that goes out into the private sector, and you start to actually engage and execute on the data liberation strategy that Todd Park talks about, then you start to have to worry about, okay, so how do I bridge that gap between the FISMA controls and the HIPAA controls, and how do I safeguard the personally identifiable information, and certainly medical information falls in that category.
One more thought on data liberation before we leave that topic. You mentioned known and unknown. Is that a constant state of change, the known information versus the unknown? Is that an evolutionary process, or are we getting to a point where, as far as the health of an individual or the health of a group of people or population, where we know most of the things that we need to know and we don't find too many unknowns that often anymore?
I think by definition, you know, you don't know what you don't know.
Okay.
So I can't really respond in absolute terms to that. But there are certain things that we know about comparative effectiveness of and treatment protocols and things of that nature. And we know how to go about the analysis of what might be most effective within a clinical setting. And that's just one example of something that we know about. But then when you start to have this blending of big data in from multiple sources and multiple, you know, structures, now you're going to start to see, or there is the opportunity to see, various patterns that might lead you into other areas of information that you can use that you may not have thought about before. And one of the typical conversations that you engage when you start talking about, you know, pattern discovery is the wealth of research information from across multiple different studies and across multiple different demographics that are engaged in the studies. Putting that information together, you could do a pattern discovery across a lot of those that research data that might lead you down a path of clinical discovery now, not information discovery, but clinical discovery for different approaches towards treatment, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Blending of data. Does the healthcare world have the same issues with merging data of different formats and different sources and different levels of hygiene and so on that the rest of the big data world has, John?
Sure they do. And there's been a lot of good work that has gone on in areas of data standardization in the health world and in the clinical world. But what is the phrase, the good thing about standards is we have so many.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, there's good work that's gone on to identify, you know, how data can be most effectively managed, but then starting to push that together, is sometimes a challenge. Although we're starting to get there, in some respects. So, mm-hmm. I think it was about a 2012 statistic that someone shared with me that we have about 80% of the hospitals are using electronic health records in mm-hmm. some form or fashion, and 50% of the physicians are doing the same. The issue there is that, you know, everybody is not up to the same level of data management and data sharing, and so there's a transition there that's we're undergoing, and that's part of the whole healthcare transformation issue.
All right, electronic health records. Within the backdrop is, of course, the issue between DOD and VA, and I'm not going to get into that in great detail. But I wonder what I take away from that. That conversation that's been going on there for so many years is, does everybody have the same definition of what an electronic health record is at this point in time? Or is that what you were talking about earlier about the nice thing about standards is that we have so many of them?
I think it's the answer is yes and no.
Uh-huh.
Everyone does not have the same perception of what an electronic health record should look like. But the answer is there a standard that people can move to here within the United States? Yes, there is a standard that's starting to evolve, and it's being worked on through the efforts of the Office of National Coordinator for Health IT, mm-hmm. and starting to push that out. Now, I think you mentioned something earlier that was very relevant, and that is extending or the opportunity to extend the electronic health record into other areas of value. So for instance, the Centers for Disease Control, they would love to be able to get to have an extension of the electronic health record that served population health needs. And so I know of a program down there that is researching hospital acquired infections. Mm-hmm. And so they would love to be able to have the information come directly from the electronic health record that would provide some clarity in that particular realm for that particular research topic. But right now it's just not available in total, and so they have to go through other alternative methods of collecting that data. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really the opportunity that we see is incrementally extending the use of this data into multiple areas. And then, as we pointed out before, you know, you've got the discovery of patterns that might lead you to explore other areas of opportunity that you hadn't thought about before.
What will drive the wider adoption of those things? What are the incentives for both government agencies and private sector organizations, hospital systems, and so on, to go in that direction? Is it only for the private sector companies, only money, and is it only savings for the government agencies, or are there other factors at play there?
I think initially it's going to be a financial incentive. So for the adoption of electronic health records, obviously we have the meaningful use standards, and where you not only adopt but you actually effectively use the electronic health record standards within your operational practice. But I think that at least my view is that as we continue with the overall healthcare transformation, we're going to see a larger amount of demand from the citizens as a patient, and we're going to see a move towards more of a consumerization of healthcare, if you will. And you can start to see that happening now. I think it was CMS that just recently released a lot of performance information, mm-hmm. relating to, you know, different providers, different hospitals, and different procedures. And they've been doing that for quite some time, but although this was another release of similar types of information. So that is going to start to educate the consumer. And I think that, you know, generationally, you know, the younger generations, maybe not me, although I do think in these terms, the younger generation is more accepting of their data being out in the open, being shared. And in fact, they demand data to be available because that's what they're used to. That's what they've grown up with. Mm-hmm. And so I think that as more information is provided that talks about the performance of various hospitals for various treatment engagements, and you know, more information is available about the performance of physicians. You know, I mean, everybody, you know, always goes out and does the research when they buy a car. Mm-hmm. But how many people really think about doing the research as to who's the best doctor to do this?
Well, I think, and where would you find the information?
Exactly.
And what's the qualitative, what's the quality of the data that's available?
Exactly. Yeah. And right now, in addition to that, you have a network of services and those providing those services that are available to you under your health plans. And so a lot of times you just confine even if you do research, you confine your research to that domain. Mm-hmm. And so I think that as we get more of this information out, we're going to start seeing more consumerization of healthcare, and we're going to start to see the patients or the citizens as patients start to become more involved in selecting those that are going to actually do the treatments that will keep them healthy.
What are the generational implications, the policy implications of that generational shift that you mentioned earlier? Because my son is 14, and you're right, he has a totally different view on data and his personal information from what my wife and I have about our information. And it seems to me that when he's my age, something like HIPAA might seem to him to be very quaint and archaic and not applicable at all to the way to potential benefits he might see at some point in the future to a free flow of that information that right now is not legal in some cases.
I think that's exactly what we're talking about, is that there will be a change in policy, a change in expectations, that data is going to be available. And I think that that's going to drive a change in some of the legislation. Hmm. Now, along with that, we're going to have to address the various aspects of security that will make the majority of the people feel comfortable. And so I read an article the other day about the doom of the firewall. And so, you know, a firewall obviously is an obstacle, mm-hmm, to getting into and out of certain areas of digital assets. And so what they're saying is that, you know, it no longer will have value in the future, because there will be so much talent to go around the firewalls that it will serve no purpose.
Right.
And so you have to think about security in different terms. Now, I don't think anybody has really cracked the code on what that will look like yet for the future. But I think that that's exactly where we're going, is we're going to have different security measures that are put in place than what we see now. We're going to have different policies that actually promote the sharing and the data liberation.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to see an encouragement of people and companies to actually use that data in innovative ways that advance our thinking on what clinically might be best practice and what might be best for a patient to actually pay attention to in their individual lives. What I mean by that is that we're now engaged in a shift from paying for treatments when something has gone wrong,
mm-hmm,
to paying for physicians, hospitals, et cetera, to converge towards a population-based management of health for those patients that they serve.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that patients are going to become rapidly engaged because of the information availability. They're going to be engaged in that discussion far more than what they are now.
We just have a couple of minutes left. The discussion about the Affordable Care Act has been up and down and one side and all around. I'm curious, though, having you've seen the ACA from the inside out when you were at HHS, what changes in the world of healthcare data will be driven by ACA that maybe wouldn't have happened if the Affordable Care Act hadn't become law?
Well, I think the Affordable Care Act itself, from a data perspective, encourages transparency.
Mm-hmm.
It encourages the healthcare plans to present in understandable ways by the average person, you know, what benefits are being covered, what are not being covered, you know, what are the payments associated with those benefits, et cetera. And so, just in general, I think that the move towards that's another move maybe towards patient engagement,
mm-hmm,
where the patient is now much more engaged in reviewing the applications for benefits under a particular health plan, and making that data available will allow people to make different choices. Now, you know, there's got to be other data that comes along with that,
mm-hmm,
because, you know, as we talked about before, you know, a particular plan and the benefits that it provides is one thing, but the performance of the physicians and the hospitals that operate under that plan are going to be those things that are going to be necessary for citizens as patients to actually make an informed decision and an informed choice.
John, it's great to see you as always. Thanks for coming in.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you.